This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofor, and here's what's coming up.
What may seem as normalcy right now could actually be the silence before another storm of attacks.
That was Richard Fonte Akum, Executive Director of the Institute for Security Studies in South Africa, who says now is the time to launch sustainable development efforts in the Sahel while Boko Haram is in apparent decline. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. A recent study by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies indicates Russia is using democratic processes such as elections and public communication platforms to undermine democracy in Africa. Via election interference and disinformation, Russia has been able to rapidly expand its influence in Africa because of the continent's weak checks and balances on executive power and leaders who welcome Moscow's unconventional engagements. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Center and co-author of the study, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shinawi how and where Russia managed to compromise African sovereignty by engineering outcomes preferable to Moscow.
Well, I think this is one of the big ironies of Russian engagement, is that it's using democratic base to undermine democracy by trying to manipulate the outcomes of elections and therefore providing the veneer of legitimacy for leaders that it supports. But very effectively, I think, using disinformation to create tensions and polarization within a society, often creating negative attitudes towards a democratic leader and often towards democracy itself, and promoting this notion that there's a trade-off between democracy and security. And so I think we've seen this in a number of places, and again, to varying degrees, but clearly in Central African Republic, there's been a very close relationship between the Russians and President Faustin Archange Touadéra. As that relationship has grown, Russia was very actively involved in Touadéra's re-election in December 2020. And in fact, there is now a Russian national security advisor in Central African Republic, and the Russian influence has just continued to grow, such to a point that, it isn't clear that the interest of Central African Republic citizens are being what's weighed by the leadership there. And it's more, what's of the interest of the relationship between Touadéra and the Russians that is influencing policy. But we've seen, again, Russians heavily involved in the Guinea elections that led to Alpha Conde's third term. The Russians were actively involved in the Madagascar elections as well. And again, to varying degrees to a number of other places.
What are the strategic objectives of Russia in Africa, especially by establishing itself as a power broker in Libya and with close ties with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and other leaders in Africa?
I see several. One is Russia's trying to establish itself with a foothold in the southern Mediterranean, in Libya, Egypt, and deepening close ties with Algeria, and gaining port access along the southern Mediterranean as a way of establishing itself on the southern flank of NATO. Russia's also working hard to try to get port access in the Red Sea. And so from a strategic standpoint, it will have a naval presence along some important chokehold for maritime commerce near the Suez Canal and the Bab el-Mandab, Djibouti, and Yemen. I think secondly, Russia's trying to assert itself as a great power by showing it can flex its muscles and have influence in Africa as part of being a global power. So as part of this, it seeks to displace Western influences, especially French, to the extent that Russia can be an influential actor with some of these African leaders, that rapidly enhances Russia's influence. And I would say third, Russia's trying to advance an alternative to democracy as a viable means of governing in Africa and globally, and to the extent that other non-democratic means of government are perceived as equally valid and legitimate, then that simply facilitates Russia's means of engaging at the elite level and with leaders who aren't accountable to their citizens.
Russia has been able to rapidly expand its influence in Africa because of Africa's weak checks and balances on executive power and African leaders who welcome Moscow's unconventional engagements. What's needed to curb Russia's destabilizing activity in the African continent?
Well, I think there's any number of things that can be done, you know, primarily within Africa to make itself less of a permissive environment by strengthening some of the checks and balances that guard against this foreign interference, and also to ensure that leaders are accountable to their citizens and not to a foreign power, and trying to reinforce democratic institutions within Africa so that an unaccountable leader can't simply strike these deals with a foreign power, in this case Russia, that are detrimental to the interests of its citizens. Another tangible project that could be undertaken is to prohibit the deployment of foreign mercenaries in Africa. You know, Africa already has a protocol prohibiting mercenaries that went into effect in 1985. And I think this convention needs to be applied, and it would limit the impact and the effect that these foreign fighters can have in shaping the governance context within Africa. I think it would be important to reemphasize the importance of transparent contracting. Part of the reason that Russia has had such a permissive environment is they're able to strike these deals in sort of backroom deals that aren't known to the public. I would throw out the importance of exposing disinformation. I think this is really poisoning the political dialogue atmosphere in many African countries and only contributes to more polarization. And so I would like to see ramped up capacity within Africa to expose disinformation, inform the public as that happens, then to hold those who are responsible more accountable.
That was Joseph Segal, Director of Research at the Center and co-author of the study, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed Elshenawi. Four workers for the International Medical Corps were kidnapped in South Kivu in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Reporter Jaffa El Katanti in Goma says not much is known about the kidnappers, but the DRC military and the United Nations are trying to find the workers. He spoke earlier today with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson.
Local sources say four humanitarian workers from the International Medical Corps were kidnapped yesterday around 11. And they were taken in the bush, but the car was left in the road. And as we know, in Fizi territory, there is a biggest activity of militia, lot of local militia. So it can be one of the militia, but no one claimed to be the kidnappers.
Now, this organization, International Medical Corps, is it known what they were doing in that area?
Yes. As you know, all the eastern part of DRC has a lot of NGOs because of the problem of security and a lot of social problems. And IMC is one of the biggest NGO operating in that area. And this is not the first time that an NGO, an international NGO, has been attacked by militia in that area. Last year, MSF also was the target of militia. Two workers were kidnapped, and MSF had to pay a lot of money to get them back.
Now, has the military or the local government or the IMC said anything about this reported kidnapping?
Yesterday, the administrator of Fizi territory say that the army is mobilized to do all they can to follow the kidnappers in their direction so that they can take back those four men. And the United Nations also said they will support army and anyone can help to get information, because according to a communication from UN, since January to August, there have been 215 incidents against humanitarian workers, and four of them were being killed in attacks.
That was journalist Jaffa El Katanti in Goma speaking by phone with my colleague Kate Pound Dawson. Many Nigerians are optimistic as Africa's largest economy gears up to launch the continent's first central bank-backed digital currency, the e-Naira. Authorities hope to tap into the popularity of cryptocurrency so it can better monitor digital currency transactions, curb black market trading in the paper naira, and also help integrate millions of Nigerians into banking. But critics say the digital currency will also give Nigeria's central bank more control, as Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
The launch of the Central Bank of Nigeria CBN digital currency, or the e-Naira, was initially scheduled for October 1 as part of activities to mark Nigeria's Independence Day, but was postponed by authorities. The CBN's communications director, Osita Nwanisobi, did not disclose the new launch date in a statement released on the bank's social media handle. But local reports say the e-Naira website recorded more than 1 million hits in the hours ahead of the initial launch, what blockchain experts like Janet Cartier say is a welcome development.
It is going to make cross-border payment easier, and it's going to also make it easier for the Naira to be widely used and accepted. So Nigeria is gradually getting to the point where cryptocurrency will be seen as an unstoppable force.
Cartier believes the e-Naira will promote blockchain technologies like cryptocurrency, which the central bank authorities banned back in February, citing its volatility and investment risk for citizens. The CBN then promised to provide a safer alternative, the e-Naira. Authorities and experts say the e-Naira will ease monetary transactions and improve long-term value for Nigeria's currency compared to its paper counterpart, which has hit its lowest value since 2003. The CBN also says the e-Naira saves on printing and distribution costs for cash. Digital strategist Daniel Yerima says the e-Naira will also help address money laundering and corruption.
Everything that's built on blockchain is very, very safe and secure. Another thing, again, is it's universal. Part of the benefits they intend to achieve with the e-Naira is the fact that it would be used for both international and local trade, and also it's going to be a tool to fight corruption.
But some experts warn the emergence of the e-Naira will cut off roles played by intermediary banks and give the central bank more control over citizens' financial rights. However, blockchain analyst Jadel Chidi disagrees.
There's a direct link now between the central bank and the individual, or the individual who uses the e-Naira, But that would not put the other banks that will not put them out of business. What I see is that the CBN will eventually create a portal where each e-Naira user, will be able to access the portal and their e-wallet, through the database they already have with their bank.
In recent years, Nigeria has seen a move toward cryptocurrencies as citizens looked for alternatives to the weakening Naira. Now, millions are waiting to see if they can benefit from Nigeria's digital currency. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The Southern African Development Community agreed at a meeting Tuesday to extend its troops deployment in Mozambique to help the government fight an Islamist insurgency in the north. SADC leaders issued a communique after their meeting, saying the mission would continue, quote, offensive operations against terrorists and violent extremists, unquote. The original deployment, which began in July, was to end on August 15th. The communique yesterday did not say how long the extension would be. Rwanda also has deployed troops to northern Mozambique. Since 2017, northern Mozambique has been hit by extremist violence from a group known locally as Al-Shabaab. More than 3,000 people have died and hundreds of thousands have fled their homes in the region, which is near the country's offshore natural gas exploration projects. In Zimbabwe, the National Peace and Reconciliation Commission is proposing a, quote, peace assessment, unquote, impact report before any big businesses begin investing in indigenous areas. The commission is mandated with ensuring post-conflict justice, healing and reconciliation in regions experiencing political and ethnic tension. Rutendo Mawere reports from Harare.
This suggestion from the commission comes as indigenous communities in Zimbabwe are being displaced by business interests in some mining and agricultural areas. Hundreds of families are facing displacement in Chisumbanje, Uzumba, Chilonga in Chiredzi, and many other locations. The National Peace and Reconciliation Commission agrees that displacements are threatening peaceful communities. Golden Chekenyere is an NPRC commissioner.
The company is coming to invest in Batok. If Greenfields are investing in Chisumbanj, if ZMDC are investing in diamonds in Marang, we have got a peace conflict assessment so that there is no conflict between the people who are hosting the company and the company which is coming to invest.
Chekenyere adds.
The commission is taking this up to say this is something that we need to emphasize, that before a major investment is done, besides the environmental assessment, let's have a peace conflict assessment as well.
Chekenyere says assessments will also help ensure that investments are successful. Jerry Moyana is a villager from Chinyamkwakwa community in Chisumbanje who is up in arms with an energy company, Green Fuel. It has taken over local farming and grazing land to expand its sugarcane plantations. He agrees that peace conflict assessments should be done before any major investments.
This is mainly the source of problem. The company was supposed to come open and sit down with the community to discuss all challenges. The company was also supposed to give clear brief how it is going to benefit the affected community for us to consider it as a development project. Failed to do what we call consultation to the community at first.
A peace expert, Ed Knowledge Makwaza, also concurs that a conflict assessment should be a prerequisite before any major investment in an area.
A pre-investment or peace assessment can help you understand the kind of dynamics that may emerge or that may exacerbate or generate conflicts within a community. And it will then be easy for not only the NPRC, but all government and non-governmental actors to be able to then involve possible or potential conflict actors and stakeholders in identifying better ways of engaging the community and being able to involve it in decision-making before any activities are undertaken.
Government has, however, been faced with resistance in most communities where these investors have received official support. Authorities claim the investments will benefit the communities, but local leaders are questioning those claims and demanding more transparency. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
Officials from Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria have agreed to work together to reconstruct the Lake Chad Basin. The region has been a hotbed of insecurity due to attacks from Islamist terrorist groups Boko Haram and its offshoots. The officials met in Cameroon's capital this week and said the area is gradually returning to normalcy, but unemployment is pushing young people to join militant groups. Mosi Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
Close to 400 representatives of rights groups, funding agencies, United Nations agencies, and the African Union met in Yaounde to map out ways of improving living conditions in the troubled Lake Chad Basin. In a statement, governors from the region said member states and funding agencies will intensify rebuilding and stabilization efforts of the area. Ahuna Eziakowa is UN Assistant Secretary General and the Regional Director for Africa at the UN Development Programme. She says many of the towns and villages in the Lake Chad Basin need to be rebuilt from the ground up.
Houses have been destroyed. Schools have become non-functional. Markets, stalls destroyed. The rule of law completely erased with police stations completely destroyed. So a stabilization program tries to rebuild the livelihoods and lives of people who have been affected by, first of all, making sure we reconstruct those facilities that serve the police, for instance.
Since the death of Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau earlier this year, thousands of the group's fighters have defected or surrendered, according to regional governments and officials of the Multinational Joint Task Force, MNGTF, a regional military alliance fighting the Boko Haram insurgency. The task force, made up of troops from Cameroon, Chad, Nigeria and Niger said attacks by its troops in Boko Haram-controlled areas have made Shekau's militants weaker. Richard Fonte Akum is the executive director of the Institute for Security Studies based in Pretoria, South Africa. He says now is the time to launch sustainable development efforts while Boko Haram is in apparent decline.
What may seem as normalcy right now could actually be the silence before another storm of attacks. A few years ago, there was a fracturing within Boko Haram, which saw the group splinter and see the emergence of the Islamic State West Africa province. But at the same time, Boko Haram came out stronger. So I think unless we have a framework which allows for multi-level peace and stabilization, it will remain extremely challenging to move towards normalcy and effective reconstruction.
Akum said to stop endemic poverty in the area, roads should be improved for fishers, herders, and crop farmers to transport their produce to market. The amount of money needed for rebuilding efforts of the Lake Chad Basin wasn't disclosed during the meeting, but Cameroon said it will allocate $300 million to spend on infrastructure destroyed by Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
As the coronavirus has spread in Nigeria, Africa's most populated country, so many myths around the virus, especially among children. A Nigerian author has written a children's book to help them understand the pandemic and ways to avoid being infected. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
A team of educators arrives at a government school in Abuja equipped with books, face masks, and sanitizers. They are here to educate school children about the coronavirus pandemic and personal hygiene. The initiative is the brainchild of team leader Raquel Kashem Daniel, a Nigerian author and founder of the nonprofit Beyond the Classroom Foundation. She started the foundation 11 years ago to help make education accessible to vulnerable children. But she says when COVID-19 hit Nigeria last year, she had to focus on teaching children how to stay safe and reduce their risk of contracting the virus through her books.
Because COVID was evolving, I knew that I wouldn't have one edition of the book. So we've had different editions of the book. I had to update it from time to time. The support that we have received has mostly come from social media and from funders who have seen our work.
The COVID-19 children's book is titled There's a New Virus in Town. It contains colorful images along with text to help children better understand the coronavirus. It also contains a quiz at the end where children can guess the next character or topic. 12-year-old Jamila Abdul was one of the readers at the Abuja school.
I wash my hands regularly and I will wear face masks, social distances, and you should keep your compound clean.
9-year-old Bekulia Oyewale says he'll keep safe in order to keep his friends safe.
I was angry because the coronavirus killed so many people, so I wanted it to not kill my friends.
Nigeria has recorded more than 200,000 cases of the coronavirus, but authorities say myths and misinformation about the pandemic continue to spread, and children are among the most susceptible. Daniel's program, which has reached some 14,000 children so far, is helping to address this problem, not only in schools, but also among vulnerable groups.
Some will say only older people are dying because God wants to save the children. And so God is cleaning the earth. We heard all sort of things. So what we do with our volunteers, because we have to train our volunteers before they go on the field, is to teach them and arm them with information about this myth. And say to them, when you get on the field, this has to debunk it.
Nigerian authorities have been making efforts to educate the public and try to overcome misinformation, which authorities blame for a slow vaccine uptake. But in the meantime, Daniel will be having an impact on kids. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinua Duofo in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.